You are listening to the Mindful Marketing Show podcast, episode 45.
Welcome to the Mindful Marketing Show with Kimberly Maska. You are about to be empowered as we teach you the best marketing strategies used by today's spiritual entrepreneurs. Get ready to share your message and inspire people worldwide.
Hello, I am Kimberly Maska, your Mindful Marketer, and I would like to welcome you to the relaunch of the Mindful Marketing Show, the podcast for spiritual entrepreneurs who are ready to change the world with their gift and have a business that reflects their authentic self. To celebrate the relaunch, I have a free gift for you. It is the Jumpstart Your Spiritual Business Guide. In it, you will find all of the tools you need to, well, jumpstart your spiritual business and create an abundance of time, money, and freedom. Don't wait to share your gift with the world. Get your copy of Jumpstart Your Spiritual Business today at mindfulmarketingshow.com. Now, before we jump in, this episode is brought to you by Kickstart Cart, my shopping cart of choice for myself and my clients. It has everything you need to create the business of your dreams with passive income, or as I like to call it, making money while you meditate. Picking the right shopping cart for your business is a big deal, and it can be very confusing. So what I have done is created a free workshop for you to help you through the decision-making process. You can find this free shopping cart workshop at mindfulmarketingshow.com/kickstart. That is mindfulmarketingshow.com/kickstart. Now let's listen to this episode. Enjoy.
Hello and welcome. I am Kimberly Maska, your host of Mindful Marketing, the podcast where today's mind, body, spirit thought leaders discuss the latest strategies to build your business and take the icky out of marketing. Joining us today is Dion McGinnis. Dion brings to nonprofits experience, wisdom, and motivation in both the strategic and tactical areas of visioning, strategizing, planning, and implementing transformative work. As a group mentor guide style of manager, Dion is adept at bringing along small or large groups to participate in the process and success. At the core of all his work are two basic beliefs: dollars are great and donors are better, and achieving the vision, one friend at a time. With those beliefs, he has raised millions of dollars, engaged thousands of members, empowered hundreds of volunteers, orchestrated scores of events, all of them, one friend at a time. Welcome, Dion, to Mindful Marketing, a podcast where we share all of our marketing and business information. How are you today?
I am wonderful. How are you doing, Kimberly?
I am fantastic. I'm very excited to have you with us today. I would love to hear about your personal journey and how you started down the path. I know you were more academic and now you're doing what you love. What was that transition like and how did you end up where you are today?
Well, it really was getting back onto the road I've been on since I was 6 years old, quite frankly. In 1962, Santa Claus brought me a camera. And so don't tell me there's not a Santa Claus. That would really mess things up for me. But at that point, I think I've written a poem about that, but when I got that camera, I started to see things differently. And then after that, I started to listen differently and hear the stories from my parents and family. And so my entire life has been about seeing and listening. And I started as a freelance writer and photographer when I got out of high school. And when the Houston economy went south in the mid-80s, I got into higher education as a writer and a photographer. And it didn't take long before I moved to the dark side, as I say, which is administration. I was a leader and administrator for fundraising, alumni relations, and those type of things. Now, I loved doing that type of work, and I always found a way to maintain creative writing and photography as part of that. But I'm not getting any younger, you know, and so I wanted to be able to put even more time and energy in that because I feel like I've been called to that all my life. Years ago, a woman told me that my ministry was joy, and I felt like I needed to be in a better place to be able to do things like that. So it was about 16 months ago, I was sitting in a leadership meeting at the university that I worked at. It was about 20 of the senior leadership team, the administrators, and the executive director of human resources mentioned that a substantial number of the leaders of the university would be eligible to retire within 3 to 5 years. And she mentioned different categories. Well, I was in one of those categories. And I didn't realize that I had any retirement option, really. And when she described that, my antenna stood up and I thought, whoa, is this the is this the door that just opened that's going to allow me to make the step back to my writing and photography, but also using 27 years of fundraising and those practices to help causes, to help individuals be empowered, to really make a difference. So after that meeting, I went back to my office and immediately emailed her and said, Catherine, what did you say? So shortly after that, I had a meeting with her and we went over all the details. And so I'm not financially retired, but I've been able to retire from higher education, bring forward my health insurance, provide me some opportunities to take this path that really I've been on since I was 6 years old.
That's beautiful. Isn't that great? What a surprise. Oh, and you can retire.
That's right. I was more than stunned. I don't know if I remember anything else that happened in that meeting after she said that. I was counting down days and figuring things out on my notepad. And so here we are.
That's absolutely fantastic. And I love someone told you that your ministry is joy. That is so beautiful.
It was a poignant moment, and I'll never forget it. I was a lay minister at our church, and I was a lector. And this woman had just finished training to be a lector. And in our service, we used two lectors, you know, one for the Old Testament, one for the New Testament. And so we were standing side by side, and she was so nervous. And I said, Josie, you're going to be fine. You know, you've got this. You're going to be fine. You believe it. You're going to be fine. And she looked at me and smiled, and you could see her exhale and relax. And she said, Dion, your ministry is joy. Thank you. And I'll never forget that. Now, have I been able to do that every day? No. but it is something for me to remember to try and keep me on the right path.
That is really beautiful. I love that. So let's talk about your ideal customer. So this is a new venture. So who is your ideal customer and how are you marketing to them?
The people that I find or they find me have always been people in search of some sort of growth. And I mean that in more than just a statistical sense. For example, the type of nonprofits and organizations that I'm trying to work with are those that want to grow their business, but also grow the empowerment of their employees, the joy that is found in their work. So it's really total growth. And so one of my taglines, I guess, is see differently, change perspectives, and grow authentically. And that applies to, like I said, whether it's helping a business attract money by creating a culture that inspires and motivates either donations or sales transactions, or whether it's, like I said, in the photography where women find me at a time that they need those photos as part of their process and their journey of self-discovery and again, empowerment and belief in themselves. So I'm looking for people that are interested in real growth. If they're just looking at sales or donations this quarter and will it be more next quarter, yeah, not so much. that's all fine and dandy, but, you know, what has happened to the people? What has happened to the cause? You know, it's not just a mission statement and a vision statement, but what is the cause that is behind it all? And I use that term because it comes from a quote from Ben Franklin. I use that in a lot of my work with nonprofits and businesses. A lot of the presentations that I do are about looking into ourselves. One is called Discover and Polish the Pearls Within. And the concept there is that we've all had lives and stuff has happened. And just like a pearl will take in a grain of sand, which is a disruption or an irritation, and over time that grain of sand becomes a treasure, becomes a pearl. And if we open that pearl up, if we open up that oyster up, we'll see the pearl. And then you ladies know that for a pearl to maintain its luster, you have to wear it. It has to be part of your wardrobe. You can't hide it away. And so even that presentation and workshop, and now I'm using that for team building, is how to find what is within us that life has given us and that we use those as part of who we are. Well, that's just not a feel-good thing. That's a way to bring a team together at an organization that we all understand we've been through lives. It's kind of a saltwater manifestation of walk a mile in his shoes sort of thing. We have to understand that we've had lives, other people have had their lives, things have happened, good and bad, but those are what make us who we are and what have provided us the treasures. So I'm looking for people and organizations that are looking for that sort of genuine growth and that sort of shared belief in individuals and humanity.
That's fantastic, because where there's room for growth everywhere, and especially, and I love that you're dealing with nonprofits and being able to go in and show them how to build that team and make that happen. That's really nice.
Thank you.
Well, how are you marketing to them? How are you finding them?
Well, I tried telepathy, and that didn't work real well. Seriously, though, when I left the university at the end of April, and so I've used several months to sharpen the axe, as it were, if you're familiar with that story from Abe Lincoln about spending that time sharpening that. I think Covey used it as well in his stories. But I've just been really kind of preparing and using my contacts to reach out to people who are involved in nonprofits. As I've developed my videos and my postings and my free guides, all that launched about 3 weeks ago. So all my content is now available online so that I can be found that way. But my primary way is having a chance to talk to people. And that really goes back to being 6 years old again. And that is, if I can sit down and talk to somebody and truly listen to what they're saying, I can show them different ways of looking at their situation, see differently, change perspectives, grow authentically. And so while the website is already showing value, the most important thing for me is to be able to have a chance to sit and listen. And when that happens, you know, so few people actually listen, so that when I listen to somebody, they can tell that it's a different situation. And almost every time I talk to a potential client or a client, they note out that I have noticed things that they've said, sometimes that they haven't even noticed that they've said. And that I'll look at what they've said in their situation a little bit differently to change the perspective of how we're going to address their goals or vision. You know, how are we going to make this happen? And so the most important thing for me is the chance to interact. So the website provides resource that will attract people and that I send people to. But then the other thing is finding networking opportunities to be in front of the type of people that will share, that do want to grow and improve, and that it has to be a networking opportunity where there's that chance for engagement and conversation. You know, I don't think you will ever find me at a speed networking event. You know, that's just counterproductive to the type of things that I do. You know, one of the things that I've developed, Kimberly, over the 27 years of fundraising is a true love and appreciation for philanthropists of all levels. And I created a blog called philanthropyliaison.com because when the world knows that Kimberly has a lot of money, there's going to be a lot of development officers lining up at her door asking for it, right? And so a lot of people are, you know, who do have money, okay, soon as somehow there's evidence that they have money, they got a new car, a new house, or they've made a big donation, and big is relative, they've made a big donation to some cause, pretty soon people are knocking at the door saying, oh, we're the next right cause. You should give your money to us. And so the philanthropy liaison piece has been developed over 27 years of working with donors to basically feel their pain and say, how do we help you find a place and a way to put your money where it reflects your values? You know, if you rub nickels together to try and make survival happen for yourself, and over the years you've accumulated a lot of wealth, do you really want to give it to a nonprofit that's ostentatious and spends 30% in overhead? You know, or whatever. How do you align your philanthropy with your values? So that's another one of the things that I do, where people want to grow authentically in their ability to change the world through their sharing of their wealth, but do it in a way that's consistent with their beliefs, their value, and their lives.
That's fantastic. So I know sometimes when I go to make a donation somewhere and you're thinking, okay, what is the overhead? How are they spending the money? Where does it go? What does it do? And there's so many questions that need to be answered. You don't know. So, you know, you serve to learn, but it takes a while to figure that out for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I have to say, what a gift to be able to listen. I have someone in my life right now that has shown me how I can grow in that area. And I'll put that nicely.
That was sweetly phrased.
But it's amazing because, you know, we really don't listen. And that's a really amazing gift.
Well, thank you. It has served me well, and I don't mean that in a negative sense. I feel like I've been able to grow, and I've enjoyed life a lot more because I've been able to listen. And, you know, my first book was called Listen to Life, Wisdom and Life Stories. And these aren't the type of stories that are going to show up in a reference book for stories for speeches. They're stories that happen in real life. You know, why is there a grocery store stalker in my book? Because of something he said and did. You know, and the teachers are around us all the time. And, you know, Buddhist wisdom says when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. But if you listen, okay, you're surrounded by teachers all the time. And they're everything from 3 years old to 100 years old. And they're successful people and, you know, people who are down and out. There's this collective wisdom that we can access if we just listen.
So true. And I hope, anyone takes anything away from what we're talking about today, which I know we'll get to more marketing, but that is really so key. And it really does change your life when you start to listen more.
It really does.
So then we'll go back to more marketing stuff. So are you using social media to interact with potential clients?
Yes, I am. Sort of. You know, even when I was at the university, the office that I was in charge of was university advancement, and that includes communications and outreach, things like that. So there was a more use of social media, and I know that it's part of what's supposed to happen, but it really, I still think it's too impersonal for my taste, but I understand it's part of the game and the process. So when I developed the new website, there's a company that I've contracted with to develop the site and to make it more like a speaker site. So actually I have two sites now, one for my photography life and one for my speaking and consulting. And part of their process was better use of Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. And so they're doing that. So yes, I'm doing it, but actually they're doing that. Mm-hmm. Now, I still write most of the content, but I provide content to them. They tweet it out. Okay, you know, knock yourself out. Let that happen. I've got followers. I don't even know who they are. But I'm using that because I understand it's part of the process and the way I might then be able to have the kind of conversations that I want to have. You know, so if they find me in Facebook or they I'm pretty good about LinkedIn. I'm real comfortable with LinkedIn. But if I'm looking at all those things as a way to start a real conversation.
Right. Absolutely. And I was going to say LinkedIn, I think, is your gold mine, truly.
Well, I really like it. I like the opportunity to post articles now. I was a couple months ago, I guess, I got the invitation or the approval or whatever it is to start posting articles and not just little snippets. I've been real pleased with how LinkedIn helps people see what I do differently. There's a lot of people who know me through my career, and they're finding the website and they're looking at LinkedIn and they're saying, well, I've never thought of you in those terms. Well, that's good. I mean, it's helping shape my message and my brand and my identity.
Fantastic. So now I know you've authored many books. So let's talk a little bit about that process. And if you self-published or went through a publisher, and what did you learn through the process, and what would you like to share?
I think the first thing I want to share is if there's a book in you, and for most people there is, if there's a book in you, then do it. If your motivation is to be a New York Times bestseller, then obviously you're going to take a different direction than somebody else. I think that any time that you publish a book, you want to keep in mind that there's a business aspect to it. And if you're doing it just for yourself, that's fine and dandy, but then don't expect it to be a business success if you're just looking at it as a personal project. Okay, so from the front end, I'm just going to say that people need to look at their project as which way do they really want it to be. You know, are they trying to be a bestseller? Are they trying to make this part of their business? Or are they just doing this for self-expression? Because that sort of changes the dynamics. And I've written books of all three of those categories. You know, I'd love to have a bestseller. I don't, but you know, maybe someday. My first book was the Listen to Life book, and And that was self-published through Ex Libris. It's a print-on-demand printer. I've been real happy with their process. I had always shared stories in my staff meetings and other growth opportunities. And people said, why don't you share those elsewise? You know, put them in a newsletter or something. So I started a newsletter that went from monthly to twice a month to weekly. And before long, I had 150 stories. So in 2005, I decided to take 100 of those, just about 100 of them, and put them in that first book. I've written several photography books. Some were just the what you'd call a coffee table book, which is just the photography. I did write one book on called The Seeing, Not the Taking, which was a guide to seeing for photographers. How do we see with all of our senses? And I tell photographers, if you want to see more, close your eyes. Okay, because then that leaves four more senses to help inspire you, and then open your eyes. So it's, you know, it's a different take on it. But I've also created one book for my first granddaughter. Now I have three granddaughters, and they'll all be getting books that I make for each of them that are picture books with, you know, with the wording will grow as they grow. So I think that the wisdom from those experiences is, one, it's very rewarding. It's very personally rewarding. Two, it's a lot of work. Okay, if you don't want to do a lot of work, then don't write a book. It takes persistence. I think it's also important to realize that there are many ways to organize a book. Okay, and so as you start a book, if it doesn't feel like that's the right structure, then pause and think about it again. The Dadden book, my most recent book, Dadden, the Verb of Being a Dad. I started that book several times, probably five or six, seven times, and it never worked. I mean, I'm writing stories about being son to a father and father to three sons. Well, how do I organize that chronologically? That's no good. Do I do it by child? Well, that doesn't sound right. And for years, I would start on this book saying, it's just not working. How do I organize it? Well, then I realized it was one of those hand to the forehead moments. If the book is about the verb of being a dad, then maybe each chapter needs to be a verb. And so Dadden, the Verb of Being a Dad, has chapters of having, loving, fishing, playing, growing, living, leaving. You know, it's the different verbs that we do as fathers or as parents or as father figures. And then the stories and the poetry and the journal entries substantiated each of those verbs. But it took a long time to get there. Once I had the concept and the organizing element, then I went back to all the materials that I had and then made copies of all the pages of the poetry and the journal entries and everything else, and then put them in binders. I love binders. I put them in binders by chapter. Well, then once I had the content in the chapter, then I was able to put a flow to it, which story should lead to what poem and so forth. Well, then I had my entire roadmap. It was then just a matter of sitting at the keyboard and following that flow and writing those stories and bringing it all together. And that made it work. And so I was able to get my author's copy of that book 48 hours before the birth of my first granddaughter. And so my oldest son got my first copy of the book at the hospital as he was waiting for her birth. And I said, welcome to the club, buddy.
Aww.
So, in fact, the last chapter of the book is called Livin', and it's about how life goes on. And it includes a love letter to my at then unborn granddaughter.
That is really amazing. You know, and you can use books, you know, like you said, this kind of a personal project that is so amazing. And I'm sure your kids will cherish that forever.
I think so. There's a lot. In fact, my middle son, as I was writing it and I told him how much material I had to work with, he said, gee, Dad, I'm happy that you thought our lives were so interesting. And I said, buddy, of course they were interesting. You know, you guys as individual people have had very cool lives. And then what we all had together was, you know, outstanding. I mean, there's no shortage of good stuff and content. It's been great. But, you know, so I think it's a gift to the boys. And with the letter to the granddaughter at the in the last chapter. I think it'll be a gift to her, and I think it'll be a gift to all the grandkids because it shows them stories about their dads and their uncles.
That's great. And I can assume you self-published that. Is that correct?
Correct. That went through Ex Libris as well. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
The photography books went through blurb.com. Blurb is, they're print on demand as well, and they do, I think, a really good job with images. So if you're, and that's not the only type of books they do, but I use Blurb for my photo books because they handle images very well.
Very nice. That's good to know. I think most of my listeners are usually not working in photography, so that's a great tip. Fantastic.
Well, if they're using illustrations or, you know, anything where they want that kind of coffee book, well, even just really good renditions of colors. I mean, if they're using, for example, if somebody was doing watercolors as part of their illustrations, those colors are so subtle that you'd want to have a printer that can handle those colors well.
That's great advice. I love that. So what has been your biggest challenge with marketing? And I know it's kind of a newer thing, but what do you think you're going to face as your biggest challenge?
I think the biggest thing is, I was going to say time, but I don't mean it in the sense that there's not enough time to market. It's that time for the conversation. People are so busy and they're tweeting and they're Facebooking and they're speed networking. And for my type of marketing, I need things to slow down a bit, okay? Because they need my potential clients, whether they're nonprofits or, you know, executives looking for executive coaching, any of the type of people I envision working with need to be able to exhale and pause and say, I need to think a little bit. Because even the short conversation, even a 3-minute conversation is a thinking experience. And so I think that's the biggest issue, is getting people to slow down a little bit to think, whether it's to slow down on the Facebook page, slow down in a conversation, to slow down and think when I say, did you hear what you just said? And I point out something that they said and the light bulb comes on. So I think time is the main thing. Growth takes time. And even in short moments, it takes time.
Yeah, and that's, I think we all need to slow down a little bit. Things happen way too fast and we miss them.
Yeah, and you know, from a marketing standpoint, you know, I need to market in a way that reflects the type of service that I provide. And so, you know, with Twitter, okay, I can make people think for a second, you know, a pithy quote or something. Well, my work is about getting people to think and grow, you know, see differently, change perspectives, grow authentically. That's a thinking, growing process. And so I think from a marketing standpoint, those are the things that I will need to continue to address is how to get people to think, if even just for a moment, how to attach my name and my services to that thought and growth process, and then to find the opportunities to sit down with somebody. I mean, I think if I have 10 minutes with somebody, you know, I can change the world. And so getting them to agree that there's 10 quote spare minutes, you know, a lot of people, they don't think they've got it when in fact they do.
I love it. So as you're developing your business, have you found one piece of software that you just can't live without?
Word.
That's like the most fundamental, right? You're like, if we don't have that, we are screwed.
Yeah, it, you know, I use Photoshop Elements for my photography. The Outlook for my email and all that office stuff, right? But where the rubber really hits the road for me is in words. And, you know, if I can't, I mean, if from a practical sense, yes, I could use Word to create flyers. I can use Word to create tables and charts. I can use Word. But the main thing is that's where the thoughts come together. That's where the proposals come together. That's where the, you know, it all happens right there when the words are assembled in the right way, either for a book or a business proposal or for, you know, a letter. Word would be it.
Perfect. And what book could you not live without?
Oh my goodness.
And it could be a personal, like, spiritual journey book. It could be a business book. I've got, had all sorts of great answers. What would work for you?
So is this where we go on for another hour? Holy smokes, girl.
I love it. You can give a couple. Does that help?
I'm sitting here looking at my bookshelf right now going, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to leave some of y'all out. Okay. The Bible's important to me. I don't get to it nearly as often as I'm supposed to, or I should, but the message is very simple. Love one another. Got it. Okay. If I can remember that, I'm going to be a better human being. Walt Whitman is very important to me. His approach of seeing things, the journeys that he took literally and figuratively, how much of his work has actually inspired some of my photographic heroes and other artists. You know, there's that period of time, Khalil Gibran and Walt Whitman, and, you know, those guys influenced and were part of the lives of one of my heroes, Edward Weston, who's a photographer. And his daybooks, Edward Weston's daybooks, are very important to me because they're very open and vulnerable. It's about 800 pages of his journal writings, but it reveals the challenges and the angst and the beauty and the joy and the fullness of life as a creative person, as an expressive. And when you read that, you realize that a life of creating is hard. Okay, period. It's just going to be hard. And it doesn't matter whether you're creating photographs or sculptures or interviews. Okay, we're all in this business of creating, or we should be, which kind of gets us back to the first book. I think we're all built in the image and created in the image of one who creates. And we need to use our gift to create, whether it's a better product or a better idea or a better recipe. You know, that's part of our call. I could just keep going. But Khalil Gibran's important. Walt Whitman's important. Edward Weston and his daybooks, as well as his photography, is important. You know, the Bible's important. You know, I look to my own books sometimes. I'll pull down the Dadden book sometimes and just open it up and say, what a great life I've had as a dad. I mean, it's the best job I've ever had. And, okay, I'll stop. I can just keep Those are all important.
Those are fantastic. And I love the idea that, you know, that is what we're here for, is to create, no matter what it is. And when we stop creating, I think we, like, a little bit of our soul dies.
Oh, absolutely.
It's so important. Wonderful. So looking back on your journey, if you had to do it all over again, knowing what you know now, what would you do differently?
Part of me says nothing, because I wouldn't be the person I am now if I didn't do everything the same. But I do think that what I wished I could have done a little different is not doubt my instincts. I mean, there were times that I would doubt my instincts or negative self-talk, self-doubt, you know, that kind of gets in the way of you trusting yourself and trusting your vision and trusting what you're supposed to do. And these moments of self-doubt, I wished I could look back and say, okay, those are those periods of self-doubt. I needed to get out of those faster or not even go there, because they did slow me down and they did impede me. And at the end, my instincts have been right.
Follow our gut. It always knows best, doesn't it?
I think so. I'm a big believer in gut instinct and trusting my intuition and trusting what I believe my call is.
We all need to do that a little bit more, that's for sure. So where do you see your platform going next? What's your next steps in building your business?
I think the next steps are really going to be how to touch more lives. Okay, so, you know, I've presentations. Okay. I can make a presentation to a group, but then how do I roll that out to more people? Okay. So I'm expanding my YouTube channel. Within the next year or so, I expect to have some product lines where these things can help people grow. And again, whether it's growing as in the fundraising world and attracting money to their organization or just growing individually. I've been pleasantly intrigued by people who have attended some of my workshops that I thought were for them as individuals, but they've come up to me afterwards and said, that was so powerful, I need that for my business. You know, I want my employees to feel that sense of connectedness. And so that's been kind of an interesting twist for me. So I'm developing a team building program, team development programs that work with images and stories. Everybody can create photos with their phones nowadays, and everybody has stories and thoughts in their head. And so I'm taking some of the seminars and workshops that I've done for writers and photographers and for, you know, groups, particularly women's groups, and I'm taking those and kind of reshaping them and creating a different sequence with them so they become a team building process where people can hear from each other. They can find their own stories and share in a way that's safe, that says we're more alike than dissimilar, and reveal to each other how we see the world. You know, if I say, hey, what, show me, create a photograph that speaks to how you feel right now. Well, would it be dark? Would it be light? Would it be fun? Would it be busy? And that sort of sharing through words and images is what connects us. And E.M. Forster in Howard's End said, you know, that was the sum of her sermon, only connect the passion to the prose and both will be exalted. And that, I think that's what I'll be doing. So I'll be able to affect more by creating these team building programs, creating products that people can buy and take away, just touching more lives that way.
That's fantastic. And I love, you're right, with the pictures and the team building through pictures, I think it makes you feel a little less vulnerable because you're not saying certain things and you're expressing yourself in the photos, and I love that.
I think it's going to work well. I've done it for high school groups. I've done it for a group of women at a women's shelter, and seeing the power of that. And now I'm going to be taking that and turning it into something for businesses. Everything that I'm really about is about growth. And again, whether through consulting or public speaking or workshops, and that's everything to me. And so I just hope to be able to expand the way that I can help people grow in their role as a father, grow in their role as a fundraiser, grow in their role as a creator of sorts. So I'll just continue to expand the ways to make that happen.
Beautiful. I can't wait to see what you do. So any last bit of advice to my listeners who maybe are in your position and possible life transition and have that nervousness about moving forward, what would be your advice?
Well, you know, I have no short answers.
That's okay.
There's two things actually that I would encourage. And one of them is to think of that pearl analogy that I used earlier. And that is, I think if everyone were to pause and say, life has been abundant and interesting. So there have been the positive and negative disruptions. There have been the things that have happened in life. Now, what has that made me into? I am who I am because of the life I've lived, the experiences I've had, the people that I've known. You know, now who am I? And once you understand that reality, that those are actually gifts and treasures, and that you understand that the troubles of today are the treasures of tomorrow, you know, there's just more pearls in the making. It gives you a different context and a different power that says, I've got good stuff. Okay. I've got treasures and I'm going to wear them so people can see them. This is who I really am. Now, what am I going to do? That leads to the second phase, and that goes to Walt Whitman. I'd encourage everybody to read the poem To a Pupil by Walt Whitman. It starts out, it says, is reform needed? Is it through you? And with that tantalizing opening, he guides you and says, if you want to affect change, basically, it's going to have to be through you, and you're going to have to be fully who you are. It closes by saying, rivet yourself of your personality. Okay? It's a huge word, rivet, to bring yourself together. Okay? It's about you, your personality, and that personality was developed because of the life that you've lived. And if you want to change your life and you want to change the world, rivet yourself of your personality that was built over this life of experiences, and then you can make the changes and change the world.
I have like no words for that. That is stunning. That is really beautiful. And I have to admit, I am not that familiar with Walt Whitman, and I now will become so.
That poem, I have used that for all age groups. including high school kids, and tried to encourage and inspire young people that already they are developing their personality. And they have got to be able to tap into that to find their voice. And if they want to make changes in the world in the future, or just in their school, or just in their family, they're going to have to do it as the human beings that they are and the human beings that they're becoming. And it's a very powerful poem. And like I said, I use about 2/3 of the poem in my presentations, but it really does challenge people to say, you know, if there's got to be change of any kind, it's going to have to be through me, and it's going to have to be me being fully me. And we need to be reminded of that.
Fantastic. Well, you have been amazing. If my listeners wanted to find you and find out more about you and read your amazing books, where would they find you?
Thank you. I appreciate that. I've had a good time, Kimberly, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here with you. The DionMcGinnis.com is the easiest way. That will take you to my consulting and speaking and my books and my presentations and my YouTube channels. For the people that are interested in that photography part of my life, the one that started oh so many years ago, that would be poetvision.com.
Wonderful. You have been fantastic. Thank you so much for your time and incredible information. You truly are a poet. I just love listening to you speak.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I've had a good time, and I appreciate the chance to be here with you.
Fantastic. And I want to remind my listeners, you can find out more information about Dion at themindfulmarketingshow.com, or you can text in to Mindful to 58885. That's 58885. And you can get a transcript of the podcast and a bunch more information. Have a beautiful day.
You have been listening to The Mindful Marketing Show with me, your host, Kimberly Maska. You can get more information about this episode and all of my episodes at mindfulmarketingshow.com. There you will find all of the show notes and links to the books and business resources we discussed. Again, that's mindfulmarketingshow.com. Until next time, be passionate, be inspired, and live your dream. Have a beautiful day.